What is that?
That is a wormhole.
That's what we have to pass through to get to the next clue.
How are we doing, Book?
Hang on!
We're on this quest to find the thing that created us.
Could have just said hello.
We have the clue.
I could kill you right now.
That's a choice. I hope you'll make a different one.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton. Jumping into a warp-capable escape pod that is somehow lodged underneath the sick bay.
That's a bit of a tongue twister there.
Thank you, sir. Yes, it is.
And we're here this week to finally tackle the episode Mirrors, which I've been promoting on the show for about 2 or 3 weeks now.
Yeah, and so, Cam, we were like, nah, I can't really be about the mirror universe. It's mostly about, like, mirrors of, like, relationships. But I guess we were a little bit right, a little bit wrong. You know, like, this wasn't about the mirror universe. I think it was about kind of, like, kind of showing kind of this dichotomy between, like, relationships going on with the Locke and Maul and the Book and why am I blanking on the main character's name? Book and Burnham, Locke and Maul, like, kind of the parallels going on between their relationships there. So I don't know, like we kick the episode off with Book kind of reflecting on the fact that Maul is the closest thing he has to family, Cam. Why? Because his mentor had a daughter that he abandoned? Like,
it's so weird because, like, I feel like they wanted Book to play a very prominent role in the final season, which is fine. And because they killed his family previously, they were like, well, we need a connection, but we don't have any. So we need to somehow, like, reverse engineer a connection between him and an antagonist. But the way they've done this through Cleveland Booker II is, I mean, it's head-scratching stuff.
What if he knew Maul? Like, what if he had met Maul, like, back when she was a kid? Wouldn't that be a lot stronger than, I never met you before, but you're my adopted daughter now.
Like, they've made this very conscious choice to have him not have met her, which is so bizarre. Because they're, you know, she knows the courier world as well. Like, he could have bumped into her at some point over time. Like, there's so many different, like, things they could have done to not have episodes where characters sit there and wax poetic about Cleveland Booker II, a character I've never met or seen on the show ever. Like, there were so many ways around this.
Yeah. I don't think it was Cleveland Booker II, though. It wasn't, like, I think it's, like, the fourth. I think our Book is, like, the fifth guy to carry that name.
Is that? I thought it was the second, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong. But
okay, well,
there you go. Fair. There you go. You know me. I love being pedantic.
Of course. This opening had one of the biggest laughs for me, where Book is kind of, like, very thoughtful, thoughtfully saying, you know, I've made some choices. Some have been good, and it cuts to Grudge. Like, that was the choice. That's what we're going to emphasize is, like, his good choice in life.
Animal ownership, you know.
Yeah, that worked out great.
But you know what, Cam? Despite some of those bad choices, he's been given a second chance. Did you know that?
Yeah, and that's something else you were kind of right about as well, is we were debating last week whether the Locke Maul story was tiptoeing towards, like, a redemption story, and I would say we are firmly headed there after this week.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes from there. But anyways, next scene, after he's reflecting on this woman he's never met before, we see this wormhole that's a little bit too tight for Discovery to get into. So they figure, hey, we're detecting that Locke and Maul went in there. So I guess we got to go in somehow. So they take, I don't know, like again, we're establishing, like, I don't know, there has to be some sort of sci-fi conceit going on after last week. Mm-hmm. I guess where I'm getting a little, like, kind of, I knew where we were going here, where it's like, almost every week it's going to be like, well, where's the next clue? You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like stretching this out over 10 episodes. It's like, Cam, we're at the halfway point. Are we going to have 5 more episodes of them hunting for clues?
How many more clues do we need?
That's a good question. Like, so how many do they have? Like 3 by the end of this episode?
I think we have 3, and it looked like a 5-part puzzle or something. So maybe just 2 more?
Okay. What if they break one of those clues in half, and then they have to chase after it for a long time?
Well, I may be wrong, but wasn't there an episode where we didn't get, like, a puzzle piece or whatever? We just got a kind of extended clue, so they actually stretched over, like, 2 episodes to get to the next piece? So they might do that as well.
Okay. Are you saying that Discovery might stretch things out, Cam?
Well, you know, they typically do, although let's remember, this is not a 13 to 15 episode season. They actually cut it down to 10. So I guess thank heavens for small mercies.
Could you imagine if this is one of their typical 14 episode seasons and they're hunting for clues over the course of that?
It's like a clue every like 3 episodes, but people just talk about the clues the other 2 episodes.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Burnham, for whatever reason, she's going to go on this away mission. Sure. Okay. Let's put the captain in a very dangerous wormhole that no one's ever explored before. But before she does that, she has to, you know, hand the keys over to Callum Keith Rennie's character. Why am I blanking on everyone's names today, Cam?
Commander Rayner.
Rayner, yeah. So, you know, like, should he feel comfortable taking it? Well, you know, it's very nice when you have this 38-year-old woman tell a 65-year-old man, like, I believe in you.
Well, I mean,
and he has been a captain much longer than she has. She's been a captain for like 1 full year. And she says to this guy who's been a captain for probably 20 years, I believe in you. It's like, okay.
Not only that, but it's also someone from the far off past who's joined him and in his own timeline.
Exactly.
Like, imagine if like someone from the 1600s was like, Tyler, I believe in you.
And then they go back to looming.
And they're like 18 years old.
Actually, that probably would just knowing myself, that would boost my self-esteem right there. So
it is an interesting choice. I mean, I don't know how old he is, his alien species, I don't know how they age, but it's also the issue, like, he was a captain, he is now the first officer, so it's almost like adding insult to injury for the captain to be like, I believe in you. He's like, yeah, I know, I was a captain for quite a long time, like, thank you very much.
But is it like, okay, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and then I think what they're getting at is, like, I believe you can deal with this really soft crew that I've cultivated here, where everybody needs to talk about their emotions, and there's real no chain of command or anything like that. I believe you can handle this. I think that's what they're getting at, but just how it comes off, it's just like, I keep going, really? Okay.
Well, yeah, and I guess it is a bit of the, like, I trust you with this team of people that... are kind of like this misfit crew that I've created this family unit out of. Like, I trust you to lead them, but that's not the way it was kind of written. It came across a little clunky.
Yeah. Okay. So look, Burnham and Book, they're in the shuttle. She's kind of talking on, oh, hey, you know, I was in that time jump, and I do remember one of those jumps was when we were still in a relationship. And so they're kind of, okay, Cam, do you think that Book and Burnham will be in a relationship by the end of the season? Once again.
Yes, 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So at least they're kind of like planting the seeds for it. But I kind of, did you ever think that it was going to be a permanent breakup when we left them off in the end of season 4?
Like, I thought it was possible to have like them just go their separate ways. But that's like nothing that's happened since that finale would ever lead me to believe that. Like, it's very much put them back on the same path. But, like, I think they could have taken maybe a darker turn with Book, but even then, it seemed like they were pretty much pulling their punches by the end of last season, so, yeah.
I'll just say this, like, you know, like, one of the tropes in, especially sitcoms, but in their series finales is, like, everybody is in a relationship by the end, you know? Like, I remember, like, in Full House, like, remember DJ's boyfriend from, like, 5 seasons ago, Steve, he comes back just for the finale?
Okay.
And, like... they're dating again? I'm like, okay.
And also, like, Dorothy got married in the final episode of Golden Girls and, like, moved out of the house. Yeah. It's true.
So I predict they'll be in a relationship by the end of this, and I predict that Gray and Adira will be in a relationship again by the end of this.
Yeah.
And yeah, that, you know, is the series finale going to be about Tarina and Saru walking down the aisle?
Oh, like, is that the finale? Do you think that's the final episode?
I wonder. I wonder, Cam. I think we're gonna see the wedding, you know, within this final season.
Is Tilly going to be together with that random crew member from the premiere?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a very good point. I think. Okay, so then, who's Rainer going to be with?
Who's left?
Ensign Gallo.
Okay.
Some rando. I don't know.
A bit of an age difference, but bit of a issue with maybe chain of command there and everything. But okay.
Yeah. Are they going to revive Fred the android and he can pop in as like a wedding guest or something?
Oh, I think that would be great. Fred the robot can like maybe like carry like a tray of drinks or something down the aisle. Or not down
a
the
tray
aisle.
Of drinks down the aisle.
Not down the aisle, but at the reception.
He could be a ring bearer. He can bear the ring down the aisle.
I think Grudge would be the ring bearer, wouldn't it?
Well, Grudge is not a humanoid. That might be difficult, you know.
I've seen people use dogs to be ring bearers.
Okay, yeah, cats, they love being given orders. Yeah, Cam.
True. That's an excellent point.
Okay.
That's why Spot wasn't the ring bearer at the Riker and Troy wedding.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, so look, we get them floating through. They spot Locke and Maul's ship. It's been blown up. And then they spot, dun, 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 the Enterprise, Cam. Mm-hmm. But it's not any regular Enterprise. What is it?
It's the ISS Enterprise, straight from the Mirror Universe.
When you saw this, I don't know. I mean, the episode's already called Mirrors. Like, was this your assumption? Like, this was the Mirror Enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, they revealed it very quickly, the ISS at the front of it. So I did just go like, huh, I guess, well, I immediately thought of you saying last week that you thought it would be a Mirror Universe episode. And I guess, like, I should have just maybe thought that because mirror in the title, but it was so obvious. Like, when it's just the word mirrors, you're like, well, it seems to me they would have something else up their sleeve, but not really.
But Cam, was this episode even about the Mirror Universe?
No. This felt like a way to save money by using the Strange New World set, make it look like the ISS Enterprise, and call it a day.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, because the other alternative is like, okay, this all unfolds on some alien ship.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a little expensive if you have to build all these new sets. So why don't we, as you say, just use the Strange New World sets instead? Like, to me, it makes economical sense. But then, like, on a story side of things, it's just kind of like,
why?
It just seems pointless that, like why are we seeing, like, some remnants of the Mirror Universe from, you know, like, 800 years ago?
It just felt entirely for, like, the novelty of having the ISS Enterprise there. It didn't feel like there was any real story reason or anything they really took from it by the time we get to the end of the episode where I went, oh, that's really cool. I mean, I guess there is a bit of a story about Mirror Saru, but I don't know. I thought it was, like, kind of a bit of a head-scratcher in terms of, like, last week's episode, we were talking about how it seemed kind of cheaper because there was a lot of guest actors that maybe could have been worked in, and not necessarily expensive actors, yeah, but just some where you're like, really? Why wouldn't they pay for that person? Here we have the reuse of the Strange New World set. This season is also cut down from like 13 or 15 or whatever to 10. How much money were they trying to save on Discovery this season?
I think they were cutting down on the budget.
Like, yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like, big time. And I think that kind of dictates, well, I think that's a result of, they're looking at the metrics for how many people were watching through those first four seasons. And they're like, is this show economical anymore?
Mm.
And look, that's why if the show was like getting like Game of Thrones like ratings, I don't think it would be ending with a 10 episode fifth season.
It's just weird to me that they didn't think this would be their final season going in, when they're already clearly like cutting all these costs and dropping the episode count.
We were predicting this like long before it was announced that the fifth season would be the final one. We were just kind of scratching our heads saying like, it just doesn't make sense economically.
I just picture them in the writer's room as they're like, you know, Paramount people are like unbolting like things from the walls. And they're like, well, no, I think everything's fine. I'm sure it's all good.
Yeah. Let's do a cliffhanger. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, yes.
Yeah. All right, so next stop, we're in the sick bay. On board the Discovery, I guess there's a Cardassian vole on the loose, and you know, we have Tilly talking to Culber, and Culber, well, he's feeling a little disjointed, so we just kind of leave it there. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess we're trying to find arcs for our characters through this season here. I guess with what Culber's dealing with, it is, you know, he has the Janal experience a few episodes ago, leaves him with a sense of uncertainty because he doesn't think science can explain this ceremony in which the Trill consciousness came into his own.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I think science 1,000 years from when we saw it on Deep Space Nine that first time, the episode Facets, I'm sure it could explain it.
Well, I mean, if Culber were to talk to, say, someone like Jadzia Dax, I feel like she could explain it to him.
Yeah. There are lots of other Trills that could have explained it to him one episode or two episodes ago.
Yeah, there's Trill scientists. Like, why are we not asking them?
Like, do they think it's magic? Is that it?
I guess.
Sorcery?
Yeah, and it was weird. Like, they were kind of teasing that of just, like, Culber being like, I'm fine. And I'm like, don't. Make me hang on this one. Like, this is not an interesting little thing to drag out through an episode of a character being like, he's basically just like sighing and walking out of a room, and you're like, it's the classic like, what is it, Culber? It's like, and not that I cared that much, but yeah. And you know, we also had like Adira kind of having time bug guilt, and it's like, boy, there's a lot of like people just feeling down on this show and needing pep talks. Yeah, I guess the most noteworthy thing that came out of this sort of extended scene was we find out that Raynor's species boils their cakes.
That was the next thing I was going to bring up, yes.
I just wrote down, boiled cakes are eternal.
That's pretty good. That's pretty
good.
Thank you. When I heard, I don't need to know how the cake is boiled, that immediately made me think, you know, how the sausage is made.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So there's time bug guilt going on. Okay, so I guess what I'm wondering here, and we can take it character by character as we move through this episode, but does it feel to you as if we're halfway through the characters' journeys as of this moment, as of episode 5, from where we started off in episode 1, where, you know, Stamets is like, I don't know what to do with my life anymore now that they're closing down the mycelial network, or the spore drive program, you know, like that's kind of what I'm wondering. And I guess they're trying to give Culber something. They're giving Book something and Burnham something. But for the rest of the characters, I think probably Raynor's one having like the biggest arc so far in these 5 episodes.
Definitely Raynor and Burnham and Book. But when I look at the other characters, Tilly's not really doing much of anything.
No.
Adira had the episode with Gray, but really since then it's just kind of been talking to Gray or some time bug guilt, as we said, but not a lot there.
What is their journey?
I don't know that we have a journey so far. We have like moments or an episode, but there's nothing in terms of an overarching story that I feel like I'm being led through this season. And the Stamets stuff we had set up, as you said, with the legacy, that is not really developed over the course of the season so far, and we're at the halfway point now, and Culber, we're just introducing something, it seems now.
I guess the Janal thing, like, remember the episode of the at the end of the episode, Janal, he was having that chat in the bar on Discovery about how his grandmother had all these spiritual things, and I guess Culber is on some sort of spiritual journey of some sorts. You know, we get that by the end of this episode as well.
Yeah.
You know, but I just keep asking, like, so what's it all going to add up to? Does Culber have some sort of revelation about, like, some things just can't be explained?
Are we going to have, like, a Culber spiritual journey episode?
Well, I think we already had that with Janal, even though it was Janal in his body. It is really like Wilson Cruz getting to do like a fun performance. Yeah. And then it's just kind of been like maybe the lingering effects on Culber that we saw at the end of the Janal episode. And now I guess they're picking up on that in this episode as well. Just kind of those lingering effects.
How is it in the DS9 episode Facets, all these members of the DS9 crew go through a very similar experience and they all come out of it and are like, well, that was a novelty. But we cut like forward hundreds of years and someone has the exact same thing happen is like, oh my God, this is beyond science. This is magic that has changed my entire perception of the spiritual world. And I'm like, wait, this isn't that new. Like, people have done this before.
Maybe it's because they had Jadzia who was able to explain the science to them and Culber hasn't bothered to look it up yet.
Jadzia like, got out a whiteboard for everyone off screen.
yeah, exactly. Okay, so we jump over to the abandoned Constitution class bridge. You know, we see the decals, you know, with the Terran Empire decals and all. Other than that, I mean, it looks like what we saw just a couple months ago when we were watching Strange New Worlds last time.
Yeah. Here's a question. Is it exciting to see an unpopulated ISS Enterprise?
It did nothing for me, really.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Like, if you had, like, even like a, you know, like they had holo characters or something, like a recreation of something that happened on that ship featuring maybe a known character or two, I think it would have been a little more memorable. Like, I know that if you ask me years down the road about what happened with the ISS Enterprise in this season, I'll just be like, don't really remember.
Well, the thing is, I kept wondering if they're going to do something creative with it. Like, I don't know, maybe we'd find the cryogenically frozen body of Paul Wesley as one Mir Kirk.
Mm.
And again, I think it just comes down to, like, how expensive it would be to bring on these guest stars. And like, it's just one additional budget thing. Like, my guess is they kind of want to go all out with the finale, and so they are saving up the budget. But I, like watching it this season, I mean, definitely, like, the first two episodes, they sunk a lot of their budget into that. But since then, I mean, they've been walking around rock quarries, mm-hmm. and they've done two bottle episodes in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a interesting choice. Interesting choice. I mean, I guess we should be glad these are falling in at the midpoint versus, like, the final episodes. That would be really depressing.
Well, I mean, I don't mind these bottle episodes because then it forces them to focus on kind of the interpersonal dynamics. You know, it forces them to be a little bit more creative versus, like, you know, cut to scene with pew, 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 pew.
Sure. And actually, the last episode, I think, was probably the highlight of the season so far. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they're on the ISS bridge. And Burnham's like, sorry, that was my brother's station. My Mirror Universe brother station. And then, I remember, like, Book was like, ever meet the Terran version? And in my head, I was just like, okay, is that a real question? They were couriers together for a full year. They also had that Giorgio experience where she had to go back into the Mirror Universe. And don't you think, like, during this point in their relationship, Burnham would have, she would have mentioned, yeah, I've been to the Mirror Universe before. I'm sure she mentioned that to him. That's why Book even asked a question.
Yeah.
But, like, don't you think she would have mentioned, like, yes, I met, like, the Mirror Universe version of my brother at some point?
I mean, you'd think so. You'd think that's the kind of thing that would come up in conversation. That's all I would ever talk about would be something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I guess he would look like a jerk if he didn't ask. Like, I mean, she's looking over at the science station and talking about her brother. I guess what else can he say? Like,
it's true.
Other than, like, cool, dude. Like,
that was the alternate line.
Yeah. Oh, so, Cam, I guess we know the fate of the Terran Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it?
Where basically they took it as an escape vessel with refugees.
Does that make any sense? Like if we go back to what, and again, maybe the intendant in Deep Space Nine was lying. Who knows?
Sure.
Maybe she got her facts incorrect. I'm okay with that. You know, maybe that's what happened. But from what she recalled to Prime Universe Kira, was that Spock instituted a whole bunch of reforms after he became commander-in-chief of the Terran Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And So what we're being told here is that a Kelpian slave turned rebel leader ended up getting a hold of the Enterprise. But it was actually like Spock became in charge of the Terran Empire and instituted reforms, which made the Terran Empire fall apart because the Klingon, Cardassian, Bajoran alliance like destroyed that empire. Like, and so it's just kind of like, I don't understand the whole like Kelpian like slave turned rebel leader. Like, how does that fit into the equation at all?
I felt like they just used that as a means of kind of giving sort of a payoff to Mirror Universe Saru from season one in a way where they didn't have to spend any money because it could be done entirely through exposition and just reusing, you know, a set from Strange New Worlds, and they could then comment on that character. And it's, I guess it's their way of kind of taking that time period of the Mirror Universe and just making it a little bit of Discovery Zone thing for, I guess, just the canon books. But it was odd.
Yeah, it's just it doesn't fit into what had already been established about how the Terran Empire had fallen apart. You know, like why would they still have rebel leaders if Spock had instituted all those reforms that eventually made the Terran Empire so weak that it was taken over by the Klingons and Cardassians?
Yeah.
Who are they rebelling against?
Like, what do you got?
But well, okay, we can go a little later on. We'll go into the fate of this crew, which also left me with a lot of questions. But okay, so now we're in Cam, this is where the episode really started getting on me, because what ensues is 40 minutes of people holding guns at each other inside the sick bay.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it just kept restacking the same stuff again and again and again. Like,
and then fights as well. Fights that don't have like a clear victor. And yeah. It's like, okay, now we'll go back to like, you know, an uneasy moment. And now there's another fight. And it's like, that was kind of my two big quibbles with the episode, was that sort of stuff. And then also the waxing poetic about, you know, Book's mentor over and over, a character we do not know.
Yeah. And I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but I double checked. And Book's mentor was Cleveland Booker IV.
Ah, IV. Okay. My bad.
Gotcha. Boom. How dare you? How dare you ever get any sort of Star Trek knowledge wrong? I've never done that in my life. No, never. Not at all. Oops. No.
Yeah.
So we get some whammy kablammy action, and I'm just like, okay. Time for some flashbacks, Cameron. So do you think, okay, it's revealed that Locke is Breen,
yeah,
right? Do you think they were trying to kind of create a red herring that Locke could have been like a from the progenitor species, just from the makeup that they were using with him, like how it could have looked like kind of an evolution of what they would have grown to look like over the course of like a billion? Do you think that was a purposeful kind of red herring to maybe throw the scent off some of the Reddit detectives out there?
I think so. That's what I fell for early on, and I felt really stupid when they revealed he was a Breen, because there's been so many mentions of the Breen through the season. It's like, yeah, I really should have paid attention to that. And they always, of course, are wearing helmets, so the people wouldn't know what they look like necessarily.
I don't think you should feel stupid, though, because like every single time that they were talking about him is like, his species, it's a mystery. Mm. And I'm like, are you saying over the course of 1,000 years, they've never once come across a Breen body and been able to identify it?
Yeah, the Dominion War. You'd think there would have been at least a couple Breen dead along the way.
And look, maybe they lose a whole lot of their records during the burn or something like that. But are you saying over the last 150 years, no one has ever come across a Breen, ever?
I was having Mandalorian flashbacks. It really seemed like the way they're kind of like building the mythology of the Breen and their two faces. It's like, oh, this is like the we don't take our helmets off kind of thing.
God, don't remind me of that last season of Mando. Are we gonna have to watch Mando season 4? Is that even like in the works? Don't they want to do like a Mando movie before like a fourth season?
I think the movie is their priority right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's what it's gonna close off the Mando stuff, or I don't know, man. I can't go back to like arguments over helmets.
Yeah. Ooh. I think they're gonna push forward with Mando stories, yeah. Because I don't maybe the Acolyte just blows up and people were like, give us more Acolyte seasons. But I think right now Mandalorian is still the kind of the centerpiece of their stories on TV.
Okay. Well, we jump into the Breen ship. It looks pretty cool. Like, the exterior, I thought, was like, you could tell, like, it's huge. It reminded me of the Mirror Universe flagship that we saw in season one of Discovery, just in terms of the size of it. It was interesting set design. What do you think of the updated Breen helmets versus, and I guess, uniforms too, versus what we saw back in Deep Space Nine?
Well, it was funny. It seems like they made the helmets a lot less like Return of the Jedi Leia. Like,
sure,
they were pretty bang on DS9, whereas in this case, you could go, okay, no, this actually has more of its own Star Trek look. I thought it was, they were fine, but it's interesting how by making them less Star Warsy, they were less distinct. Like, they don't necessarily stick in my mind the same way.
Yeah, I mean, as, you know, Maul calls them bucket heads, which made me think of heavy metal guitarist. For those that don't know that, a bucket head is a real guitarist who wears a KFC bucket on his head when he performs music. He used to be in Guns N' Roses and some other bands out there as well.
He was just on the Chinese Democracy like album and tour, right?
That's what I understand. Yeah. I saw Guns N' Roses last fall and he was not performing with them. It was Slash was back in the band by then.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was that point where most of the band left Axl behind and Axl was touring with Buckethead and a few others.
Yeah. Cam, I get bored again because it's just like Maul and Locke throwing punches at each other and falling in love for a reason I don't understand. Cam, why are they in love? We have multiple flashbacks. And you jump from one, and then we get the next flashback, and suddenly they're in love, and I don't understand why. We don't have any reason that's established here that would say, like, oh, I understand why they're in love, and they're willing to die for each other now.
Like, why not have, over these flashbacks, some, you know, maybe changes of scenery, show them spending time together, like, a bond? It didn't really give us that. It was more like, well, you're fairly young, I'm pretty young, I guess that's good enough.
Like, I'm a loser. You seem cool. You like how my face looks without the helmet on. I'm here to take freight. Let's get it on. Like, I don't get it. I just don't follow the logic of their love story. And here's the deal. I'm not invested in their relationship at all because there's just nothing in there. It seems as if there's nothing going on other than the writers telling us, oh yeah, they're in love. They're in a relationship. I'm like, okay, why? Like, I just, other than seeing them kiss each other, I don't understand why, like, what do they have in common? What do they talk about other than, yeah, we can be free of that bounty?
I have no idea. It's like they came up with the idea, I think, of like kind of like Romeo and Juliet on the run or Bonnie and Clyde or whatever. But if you go in, I don't know, you know, read Romeo and Juliet or see the play or watch Bonnie and Clyde the movie, there's a very clear connection between those characters, and you understand what drew them together and why they are inseparable. And I don't think they've given us that so far on Discovery, and they need to. If I'm going to be invested in this for the next 5 episodes and feel like an emotional weight of the threat of them being torn apart, it needs to work. And so far, it's very thin stuff.
Yeah. So, okay. I might be off. Help me follow this train here, train of thought. Mm. Are Maul and Locke looking for the progenitor technology so that they can get rid of the bounty and give this technology to the Breen, which we saw in kind of that time jump that the Breen would use the technology to destroy the Federation? Is that kind of the ultimate goal here?
Yes, I believe so. To basically, take this this mark off Locke so that he can, basically they can be free. In all caps.
It just seems as if there's been so many simpler ways for them to pursue a relationship, like, without her, like, fighting people.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know.
Like, they seem very volatile. Like, they seem like they're just on the verge of always fighting. And this is a problem. Like, I don't buy that these two would get this tech, give it to the Breen, and then be like, oh, now we're just able to live a stable emotional life together. I think they would still be like kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. I think they'd be up to no good.
Yeah. Which is like weird because the show is asking us to believe in this whole second chances thing, and that Book is going to play like a key role in some sort of connection with Maul that will probably help diffuse the drama of what's going on with them. But like, there's nothing in terms of the presentation of those two characters that I could really buy at this point in terms of Book's impact.
Don't you like, okay, my guess is things, as the season goes on, things will continue to escalate between the Discovery crew and Maul and Locke, and Book will have to talk to Maul. She'll have to talk her, he'll have to talk her off the ledge. She's about to do something really dangerous, and then he'll touch her emotionally, talking about her father or something like that. That's my guess.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, they have to do something with the father character at this point. Like, are we going to get a flashback, do you think? We have to.
Do we? I don't know.
It would be so weird. It would be so weird on the part of the show to never do that.
Well, yeah, but this is Discovery, where it's a lot of, like, tell, don't show.
Well, that's true. But you'd think they could just, like, pay some Toronto actor to pop up for, like, one episode as, you know, Cleveland Booker the Fourth and call it a day.
Yeah. I don't know. But, okay, so is number four, did they establish, I feel like I'm probably a dummy right now, but did they establish that he's actually dead as well, or that he just passed the name and courier ledgers onto Book the Fifth?
I got the impression he was dead.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah. As is Maul's mom, who died in a mining colony. I thought that was
mining in Star Trek.
Yeah. I underline that mining again. Yeah.
Yeah. So we get another flashback scene and we see, okay, Kim, maybe again, I'm a total dummy and I'm missing things. Like what? So why do they have like, kind of like, CG faces versus just regular faces? The Breen.
I was really unclear on that.
Okay.
And I was wondering if it was like, the longer they keep the helmet off, their face solidifies or something. I don't know. They didn't explain it.
That's kind of what I gathered. But then why does the Breen have a culture in which they want to keep helmets on that give them gelatinous faces?
You see, in my mind, did you ever watch Hellboy 2?
Yes, I did.
The character played by Seth MacFarlane, who was like kind of the robotic kind of suit, but he was like a gas that was contained within the suit.
Yeah.
I was like, German. I always kind of thought of the Breen the same way, as like kind of like these contained like gas clouds or something that I thought would be kind of interesting. But this episode just once again proved that like if you have a character who wears a mask and is mysterious, there's nothing you can reveal that will in any way satisfy the curiosity.
Don't you talk about that Boba Fett miniseries like that, Cam?
Well, there's the maybe the greatest example of all time. What happened when they revealed what Boba Fett looked like? No one was satisfied.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, very good thing to bring up. Like the Breen were always kind of kept a mystery, in Deep Space Nine. You know, and we had those lines from like Wayun, who was commenting like, it's kind of weird that they're walking around in these refrigeration suits because you know we took a look at their planet. It seems to be a hospitable planet.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked how it was like left kind of a mystery. So apparently they don't need refrigeration suits because Locke is walking around without one this entire season.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You pictured them as kind of a gas. I kind of pictured them as like cats with snouts.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why they had kind of those like snouts on their helmets. But I guess that's not the case.
Like the one from Star Trek V that's dancing?
Yeah. Well, that's where my mind always goes, Cam.
Oh, okay.
So I was just like, okay, so this is, to me, okay, like, they're green folks without ears, and they have gelatinous faces. Like, to me, I was just like, oh, I kind of wish they kept the Deep Space Nine mystery.
And if you're going to reveal a face like that, that's fine, but the thing is, like, Locke looks incredibly generic to me. Like, he looks almost like a lesser Krull from Star Trek Beyond, like, less effort put into the makeup. Whereas, like, had they done something really interesting, I'd be like, oh, you know what? At the very least, they gave us, like, an alien design that looks really unique. But I feel like they went generic so that the audience would be questioning what he was the whole time. But it's not exciting to reveal it that way.
I just think this was meant to throw off the Reddit detectives that were speculating on, like, Locke's origin. Because the fact of the matter was, they kept saying, he's a mystery.
Yeah.
He's a mystery. And in my head, I'm like, are you saying you've never once ever encountered a Breen body ever?
Right. It made me really nostalgic for, like, the reptilian Zindi, where you could just tell they put so much effort into making, like, you know, basically a green-faced alien look really cool and distinct.
Yeah. Okay. So, jump over to the next scene, and Maul is, you know, talking about, like, her trouble growing up, because she and Book are on their way up to the bridge. So we've got yet another sequence there where Locke and Burnham are just holding guns at each other in the sick bay. And I was just like, okay, but it's all about Burnham telling Locke the Federation is just about second chances. And I'm sure the word connection was thrown in there, maybe even the word tether. But this is kind of where, like, I'm checking out, because, like, we have Locke saying, like, well, if we fess up and go to jail, can we serve our time together? Like, I don't think that's a thing. But Burnham was like, I can see if that's possible. I'm just like, what else is she going to say? Like, no, absolutely not. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of goofy dialogue going on.
It's also frustrating because we are at episode 5. Locke and Maul are not turning themselves in at the end of this episode. Like, we know that. And so it really feels like you're prolonging something just so you can have your characters talk to each other. But it's not even like they're exchanging information that's that interesting. Yeah, like, that was the frustrating thing to me. Like, it's almost like the show realized that, which is why, like, Locke and Burnham suddenly just turned into, like, a fist fight for a prolonged period of time. Because it's like, well, we can't really do much, so let's just give the audience an action sequence.
Yeah. Okay, well, they jump back up to the bridge, and then, I apologize, they did establish that, indeed, Cleveland Booker IV has perished, we also have Book talking to Maul about his relationship with Burnham, you know, how they were lovers and couriers, too, so again, those mirrors, Cam, just like Locke and Maul, Burnham and Book were also lovers and couriers.
Yeah, and yet, I wouldn't say Maul really cared that much.
Yeah. And just like Maul, Book also resented his own father, too. So I'm just like, okay. It's like, yeah, these people, they are parallels here. We get another flashback sequence in which the Locke and Maul forbidden love is discovered by the other Breen. And I don't know, to me, it just seems so paint by numbers. Like, I kind of could tell where this was going, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I can understand why Locke was demoted to the shuttle bay. Like, he doesn't seem like the brightest one out there.
No, I did like the uncle character, who was disapproving and who they wounded. I would like to know more about this uncle, because, like, give me some of his insights into his nephew, because, as you said, like, Locke doesn't seem like the sharpest. And I would like to hear, like, the uncle's just long, weary stories about why Locke wound up where he did.
Well, and also, okay, if Locke's not the sharpest, what is it that Maul sees in him? That's what I'm still kind of flabbergasted by.
That I can't answer either. I guess just some sort of inherent goodness she sees in him or something, like a someone she can relate to. But again, it's all very thin stuff that we don't have a real emotional connection drawn to, you know, that we can draw from it.
Okay, well, I don't know. Then we get, you were asking at the start of the season whether we'd get those fire pots returning on the Discovery Bridge. We definitely get them on the Enterprise Bridge when Maul wants to just kind of create this power surge. They're done trying to get through this antique firewall on the ISS Enterprise. So things go wooey kablooey. Then we got this, like, fight sequence between Burnham and Locke. It's the old classic lands on his own knife sort of deal.
Not the brightest.
not the brightest at all. I will note that it kind of reminded me of that episode from last season of Strange New Worlds, in which we had the Klingon butcher, as he was known, and it was left very, very unclear. I guess spoiler alert for Strange New Worlds season 2, but it was left unclear whether or not Mbenga had actually murdered him or not, or whether it was kind of self-defense, because they had that kind of, like, opaque sort of glass panel. And I don't know, they busted through that glass panel here, so there would have been no uncertainty.
Is there ever really that much ambiguity in anything in Discovery?
Yeah, what's the most ambiguous thing that's ever...
There's not a lot. No,
yes, Cam. What is the nature of the of that that trill ceremony? You can never know. Science will never be able to tell us.
I guess there is Gray's constitution. That's the most ambiguous thing on the show. Yeah.
Or also, why did Starfleet care about the Red Angels?
That as well. And also, what's going on with the New Eden planet that was like in the Beta Quadrant? What was the point of that?
Yeah, and then they ended up somehow in the Third World War, or like no. Yeah, they were originally from the Third World War and then got sucked in. I don't think they ever established why the Red Angel... Like, remember in the finale, like, we just saw, like, past Burnham, like, jumping through time, and I don't think they ever really established her going back to those New Eden, like, World War III refugees or anything like that.
They never figured out how that belonged as a piece of the puzzle by the end, no.
Okay, so it's just, like... there's just, like, a lot more arguments going on, you know, on the bridge, you know, like, book... finally convinces like Maul to like put down her weapon because Cam doing what he does, he gives his weapon to her.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've seen this in like so many other movies and TV shows. I'm just like, it's just paint by numbers sort of storytelling. And it's also very just arbitrary. Like I don't for an instant believe that Maul would just like go like, okay, well we're buddies now. Like that just doesn't seem to be part of her constitution.
It would also be more interesting if they did team up to work together. Like, I always think of X2, X-Men United, which was like, you know, the masterstroke of that was teaming Magneto and his Brotherhood of Mutants up with the X-Men, because there's like a tension there. And I would have been okay, actually, with Locke and Maul going on the quest with Burnham and Book to find the pieces, because at least there would be some like friction there. But no, we have to send them off on their own again.
Yeah. Okay. So we got our final flashback, you know, more gelatinous faces. We find out why there's like kind of this bounty on the on Locke and Maul. Okay, I guess like again, here's a problem. You're 5 episodes into the season. You're halfway through the season, and then that's when they establish the motives and what's driving the antagonists here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they don't seem like super high intelligent antagonists either. They're very very mercurial, and I'm just like. Like, I don't know. Okay. Let's rank them for the last couple of seasons, Cam. Where would you put them versus Osira versus, say, the DMA in terms of antagonists?
They're above Osira.
Yeah.
They're, so far, I think, under Lorca. Leland. I think they might be above Leland.
I think they're above Leland.
Yeah. And then, what was the last season? I guess
The DMA.
The DMA.
Or I guess Tarka was kind of like, he went kind of wacko.
Well, you know what? I would put Tarka higher than them. Probably under Lorca. But Tarka had a very like distinct motivation. Like we found out what was kind of driving him. He behaved in bizarre ways as the season went forward. But like they gave us an emotional story as to exactly what had happened to Tarka. Whereas here... they told us what happened, but it wasn't particularly emotional.
Okay. So we established that like the ISS Enterprise is going to hit the aperture of the wormhole in 5 minutes. And the next thing you know, they jump onto the bridge and they say 4 minutes now. So that means you can get from the Enterprise sick bay to the bridge in 1 minute's time.
That's right. Yes. And?
I did not know that.
Those turbo lifts are a lot wilder than you realize.
Yeah. Okay, so we're back on Discovery. They're trying to figure out how to pull Burnham and company out of the Enterprise, or I guess out through the wormhole. They don't know it's Mirror Universe Enterprise. And what we get back is technobabble, technobabble, technobabble. And I mean, I know it's supposed to show the ingenuity of the crew, but it's all just sort of like, it means nothing to me.
The most memorable thing from that scene was citrus mash all around. Thanks, Raider.
Okay. Would you consume citrus mash?
I do like citrus things, so maybe I would.
Okay, have some mash.
Yeah, I mean, the mash part isn't that appealing, but I'm going to assume it must taste pretty good if it's citrus-related.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a try. I'm sure at the next Star Trek convention, it'll be served at the bar.
Should we maybe have like a stand outside the convention selling citrus mash?
Yes.
We'll have like Rainer ears, but like really cheap versions.
Remember when we got like Bajura noses to get our photos taken with, was it Kaiopaka?
It was, yeah. Those were great, yeah. RIP to Kaiopaka and Camille Saviola.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so guess what? They figure it out. They go through the wormhole again. Everybody's smart and genius and all that. And this is one of my favorite revelations in this episode. They're like, okay, yeah, we're gonna send Detmer and Washington to fly it back. those two have been in one episode so far this season, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just kind of weird. Like, Saru has been missing most of this episode, most of the season. Awashikin and Detmer have been missing as well. You know, it's really just from the bridge crew. It's really only Reese still hanging around.
Yeah,
you know,
it's really strange. And like, there's that shot of the Enterprise like flying away. It's like this little ship in the distance, and she's like, "Well, goodbye, Awashikin and Detmer." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Come
Does that
on.
Ship even have shields?" Like. Does it still have warp power after 1,000 years? Like, I don't know. Those commanders could be in for some trouble. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that was it's an odd choice to, like, I can understand, again, not paying for, like, Jason Isaacs or whatever to show up. Or, you know what, Doug Jones probably costs some money, too. Okay, cut him out of a couple episodes here or there. But, like, I don't know, does, like, it cost that much for a Washington and Detmer to pop up?
Yeah, I don't think Doug Jones doesn't get paid. Like, I think,
yeah, that's true.
You know, you sign your contract for X number of episodes, and they got to pay you.
Well, they made a smart move then, paying him and not putting him in episodes.
That's true. That's true. I wonder how much of it is just like kind of the actors saying to the producers, like, hey, maybe my availability isn't going to be so great this season or something.
Maybe, yeah. Do you think, speaking of Saru, if the season does end with the Saru wedding, are Maul and Locke there?
No. I don't. It would be hilarious. It would be hilarious if they were. But yeah, they're part of the wedding party. You know, like Locke is Saru's best man for whatever
they're
reason.
Throwing rice.
You know, they go grow really close. Yeah,
yeah.
That, then unleashing the doves. You know. Okay, like another episode. Yeah, where it ends in the bar known as Red's, and we get a Saints of Imperfection shout out with you know, Culber talking about how he's dead once.
Yeah,
I was just like, it just seems as if they really want to emphasize something with like Culber's arc here, but I don't think it's a particularly interesting arc where you have a medical doctor turned ship's therapist who is obviously incredibly smart and well-versed in science. And he's all about how, you know what? There's just so much uncertainty going on. How can you explain it?
Do you think the end game of this is him stepping down from like Starfleet by the end and going on some sort of other journey?
Well, you'd want him and Stamets to still be together, though.
Yeah, although apparently you can't talk to Stamets about any of this.
That's true. Yeah, it's only Tilly.
Yeah, only Tilly. The science officer.
Yeah. No, in all fairness, she's an engineer.
That's true.
You know,
yeah.
/ Starfleet Academy instructor on leave for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. Okay, the other silly thing that I thought was, like, they established that these Terran refugees made it into the Prime Universe and pursued careers in Starfleet. To me, it's so goofy with the whole, like, second chances. Like, this is what this season is about, is everybody gets a second chance.
Okay, so like Mirror Universe Saru made it there and joined Starfleet, right?
Yeah. No, is that what they're saying?
Or was it just some of the refugees joined Starfleet, but we don't know what happened?
I think just some
Saru.
Of the refugees. Yeah.
Because if Saru did make Starfleet, like, I feel like, you know, Prime Saru might have stumbled across that information, or someone might have maybe mentioned something.
Yeah, but you know, they could say records were lost during the burn.
Oh, that's the easy way to write that one out. Yeah, totally.
Oh, wait, no, but can you say that if they are finding this out through records that some of these refugees did make it?
Well, if it's in the records of... Wait, no, the records were... Were the records their own or were they from the Enterprise?
Well, I don't think the ISS Enterprise people were writing, hey, guess what? I've made it into the Prime universe.
Yeah.
And I've joined Starfleet.
That's a good point.
And I've also abandoned this ship.
Yeah, they're not like, going back to the abandoned ship to enter updated logs. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I don't know. So as Burnham says, you know, these refugees, they had hope and they wanted freedom. And despite impossible odds, they got it. And like them, maybe we can shape our own futures too. Cam, no one talks like this in real life. You know, like, it's just kind of like, it's just like silly nonsense to me when I hear these sorts of like soliloquies.
It's also pretty, you know, hammer on the head of the nail there with the Locke Maul story, which is, you know, we can shape our own future.
Yeah.
So, I look forward to seeing how those two shape their own future.
Yeah, can't wait. Okay, so they have yet another piece of the puzzle, and they're figuring out the progenitors want to teach everyone lessons every time they find another piece of this puzzle. I'm just like, thanks.
Sounds convenient.
Yeah, great. That's wonderful. Cam, we are the halfway mark of this season.
Yeah.
Does it feel like this is like the halfway mark? Like we've like it is, but I just don't know. Like, I'm having trouble kind of figure out what this journey is shaping up to be here for both our characters and then just kind of the plot as well.
Well, I find it very strange that it's not until the end of episode 5 that they're like, these, you know, these pieces we're tracking down have to teach us lessons. That's something that I feel like you'd set up earlier than the halfway point.
Yeah.
I think that's odd. I guess in terms of like momentum, I'm happy it's the halfway point because I fear what it would feel like if it was like 13 or 15 episodes. And, you know, I'm not complaining about the season so far. It's been pretty watchable. This was maybe my least favorite episode of the season, but it's up there. But
yeah, for me, this is the episode where I was like, oh, we're just getting to kind of like slog territory that Discovery often falls back onto. And like last week, we're like, yeah, you know what? The time jump episode, like that's a high point for Discovery for at least like 2 seasons. But then we're also like, oh, I'm sure it'll fall back into like its own same like narrative traps that really annoy us.
I'm more into the episodes where it's like, let's pursue a high concept kind of thing, whether it is like, you know, Culbert taking a different body or the time loop stuff, like, because they're kind of focusing on what that is and what it means to the characters through the episode. Whereas like an episode like this is like backstory the episode.
Yeah.
And it's like 25 minutes or 20 minutes or something of Locke and Maul flashbacks that, yeah, the Breen stuff is sort of interesting, but like, there's not a lot on the bone. And so, like, what's my takeaway? It just feels like kind of connecting dots so we can move into the to the second half of the season.
I do have to say, though, Cam, the final shot was a zoom in on the puzzle pieces that they've discovered so far.
It's true. Yes.
Okay, so it's only been, it's interesting because they premiered like the first 2 episodes like back to back, and so we've only been on this journey like a few weeks, but it does seem to be whizzing by very quickly for like a final season of a Star Trek series.
It does, yeah. I mean, that is not something we would have said with season 4 Discovery. This one is going by at a clip, and I guess I am really interested to see where this show goes in its final episodes. So it's like, I'm along for the ride. This is not the dire journey that the last couple seasons of Discovery were, but
yeah,
it's almost like I feel a little more apprehension about like, guys, come on, hold it together, like put out a final season that you can be a little more proud of than, you know, some of the last couple.
Yeah. I predict that they find all the pieces next week and the rest of the season is about wedding planning.
Do you think they have all the pieces by episode 8 and then it's like 9 and 10 are the kind of the resolution to the search?
This is Discovery we're talking about, and where it's slog, and then we have to ramp up everything right at the very end.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe, I don't, but here's the deal. Maybe they get all the puzzle pieces by episode 8, but whatever this technology is or what have you, then that becomes clearer. And it's a race to keep the technology out of the hands of the Breen Imperium.
We're going to have like a ship battle with the Breen, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. They've already established kind of the look of that kind of flagship there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, another ship battle finale on Star Trek in the new era. That's that'll be a novelty.
Yeah. Yeah. Alrighty then. Cam, we are back next week. And is that episode called Mirrors as well?
It is not Mirrors. It is, I believe, Whistlespeak.
Oh, right. I think you were really, really hoping that this will be kind of a Western episode.
That's the hope. There's also one coming up, and I don't have the name in front of me, but it's like Lagrange Station or something like that. That one sounds kind of Western-y as well. But Whistlespeak is the first of our Western episodes coming up.
I think it's actually like, it's not meant to sound Western-y. It's kind of a like a scientific term.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Well, one can hope. One can hope for their North Star follow-up.
Yeah. Well, it'd be 1,000 years in the future. I'm sure those people have made it from Western technology all the way up to... they've got access to iPhones now.
That's true. Although, if you are going to cut the budget, just put them in another rock quarry with cowboy hats and I'd be happy.
Okay. Well, on that note, that wraps it up here for... actually, you know, Cam, let's rank the episodes so far this season. I'd say Time Jump number one.
Yep.
I'd say... I'm wondering where to put Janal.
I would put the... I think I would put maybe the premiere at number two and maybe Janal three.
Okay. But then what about episode two? This is where it kind of gets like murky in my head because we have episodes one and two back to back.
One and two kind of blur together because they were released at the same time for me as well.
Yeah. At this point, I'll say that the season has been relatively consistent, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I agree.
I'd say more consistent than season four. Well, actually, no. Season four is consistently terrible.
No, that was actually very consistent, Tyler.
Yeah.
One of the most consistent seasons in the history of Star Trek.
Yeah, no, and that's a very good point. It cured my insomnia.
That's right. Okay, so you can, of course, leave reviews for us wherever you get your podcasts. Those are much appreciated. You can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vol in the Wall, Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin', that's R-E-P-O-R-T, T as in Terran version of your brother, O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed. Boiled cakes are eternal.